Okay, so the next section is called Achman. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 6th chapter, 21st verse, the gopis first executed the process of Achman, drinking a sip of water from the right hand. They purified their bodies and hands with the Nyas mantra, and then applied the same mantra upon the body of the child. So this Achman, that is a subtle purification of the body. After the body's been cleansed by taking our bath, then Achman is the next stage of purification. So this is done, Achman can be done many, many times. It's done, let's say, after bathing, then after tilak, before, after eating, can be done before studying the shastra, after coming back from some place outside, you know, traveling like this. Anything where some purification needs to be done, especially before there'll be chanting of mantra. So basically the process is that we're taking water, because Achman is the first thing we're doing. Then that water, it is plain water. Then when we put it in the palm of the hand, then we need to look at it. Two reasons are there. One is that removes anything that may be inauspicious there, because you haven't been able to do any other mantras or anything into the Achman cup, because you can't do that unless you've done Achman. So Achman is the first thing one does. Does that make sense? Like, we have water in this pot. Now, then we want to do Achman with the water and then purify the water in this pot, right? But we can't purify the water in the pot until we've done Achman. So that means the Achman water is plain water, right? No mantra, no tantra, no puranadis and anything else, right? So one has to look at the water. The other thing is that one should always see whatever is going to go into the body. It means what goes into the body that you see, that's what you get the benefit for. And what you eat or drink and you don't see, then that generally someone else gets the benefit. I mean, you have to digest it and do all the work, but they get all the energy. That's why one doesn't eat in the dark, where you can't see. If you're eating and suddenly the lights go off, then one stops eating. Because otherwise you can eat, you know, generally by practice. One is, you know, generally it's one of the most practiced activities that one does. So even with the eyes closed, you can figure out where your mouth is. But the problem is then the energy goes to all the subtle living entities. They get it, you know. Because Krishna takes care of everybody. So they also need to get energy. They also need to get benefit of pious activities and all those things. So therefore Krishna has prescribed so many ways. So if you're doing various activities but you don't protect them properly, then all these living entities that live in Bhuvar. Bhuvar is the place between here and Swarga, between here and the heavenly planets. You know, the Rakshasas, Yakshas, and Pisachas, and all these, you know, they're very powerful personalities. They can get benefits from what you do. So one of them is the eating. They'll get all the energy, and you have to do all the digestions. That's pretty good program, no? So like that, Krishna takes care of them. So therefore you look at the water when you say the mantra, and that purifies the water. Okay. So then Hari Bhakti Vilas, quoting from the Kashi Kanda, of the Yajnavalkya Samiti and the Bharadvaj Smriti, the Kurma Puran, and the Vishnu Puran. So it gives different rules. So these are summarized here. A devotee should perform achman to achieve physical and mental purity before performing spiritual activities, such as applying tilak, chanting Gayatri and japa, performing puja and brata, taking prasadam, reading or reciting shastra mantras, and meditating. Then here, a note gives Gaudiya Vaishnavas commonly perform achman before performing spiritual activities, as described above. It is less common for them to perform achman after the bodily activities mentioned, unless one intends to perform some spiritual activity shortly. Devotees who worship the deity should know these rules so they can maintain the principle of cleanliness. Oh, here it is, Shuddhi Vichar. 168. So then it is also recommended to perform achman after rising from bed, bathing, dressing, touching the lips, eating, going to an impure place, spitting or coughing, speaking improper words, touching something impure, and returning from a journey. One should perform achman twice before performing a homa, chanting Gayatri, worshipping, eating, and giving in charity, as well as after going to cremation grounds, touching the lips, and talking to a chandala. Okay, so the point he was mentioning is generally before we perform spiritual activities, we're doing the achman, and these other ones we're not so accustomed or practiced at doing. Though one can know this standard so that one knows if one's done those things, then one should do achman again. Just like if you're doing some puja thing and you have to go and spit, then you would do achman again before starting. Well, if you just do achman, go to the pujari room, get some other paraphernalia, come back, it would not require doing achman again. So these points that it's mentioned here, then it is good to know them just so that you can perform the achman when it needs to be done. So it mentions the place where one performs achman should be pure, free from hair, bones, ash, or any other impure items. The water should be cool, fresh, without bubbles or foul odor or taste, untouched by fingernails, hair, or any impure item. Rainwater, being in the mode of passion, should not be used. So it means it's pure, fresh water. If it's been, in other words, the water in the achman cup should be changed regularly. It should be sitting there for days and days on end. Generally, before any kind of puja can be changed, unless you keep a lid on it. If you keep a lid, then it can stay for the day. And the next day, then you put fresh water. Untouched by fingernails, we'll see that any of the water, anything to be used in any of the puja, should never be touched by the nails. The nails are considered impure because two things. One is nails are the waste product of the bones. When the bones are maintaining themselves, the waste from the bones comes out as hair and nails. That's why we see hair and nails, they're not really biodegradable. Just like bones last. You know, they dig somewhere, do their archaeological dig, and then they find bones that go back a long ways. So in the same way, they also find hair and nails. Because the hair comes from the bones. You understand? It means the bones in their process of maintaining themselves. Like that. Then the waste product from that maintenance gets thrown off in the form of nails and hair. You understand? Kind of changes one's outlook on life, you know. In the West, they put so much into the hair and filing the nails and painting them different colors and things like that. So that's why we see the pujaris generally, you know, they keep their heads shaved, they keep their nails cut short, you know, that way they can bathe, you know, fully every day and maintain a very good standard of cleanliness, like that. Okay, then it's, for the men then, when they do achman, then it's best if the head or throat is not covered. Then one should be properly wearing sacred thread if one's going to be doing some puja. Sika should be tied. Then one should be wearing proper clothing. The hands and feet should be clean. One should not be wearing shoes. One should be kneeling or sitting. Yeah. And ideally not with the feet showing. Okay, see chapter 4. Oh, that means we'll come to it. Chapter 4, what is chapter 4? Okay. Okay. So, are there any questions on this? Yes.
You mentioned there are two points of the male's impurity. You mentioned both of them.
Yes. One is by nature they're not very clean because they're the waste product of the bones. Two, they're very excellent at collecting dirt underneath. So that dirt is generally not considered overly pure. Therefore, any of the water for bathing, achman, you know, boga, anything, one is always very careful that the nails do not go inside. Like that. One always has to be careful of that. Even the hands are clean. One doesn't touch with the nails. Prokshana, but one never uses the nails. Prokshanas, that's, we'll get to that, but some water is put in the palm of the hand, right? And then you take your hand and you swing the hand and the water will naturally come out the ends of the fingers. So it's coming very quickly. So it's not going to, it means if you pour it into the front part over the fingers, it may run down and over the nails. That you can do if you're sprinkling water outside or on the floor or something like that for cleaning. Because then you can get more sprinkle. You know, you want a lot of water going. But in prokshana, it's a very subtle thing. It means we'll get to that when we get to the purvanga karma. That purvanga karma is subtle. So the mind is what's being purified in purvanga karma. The mind, the subtlety of the items. Means is, in other words, we're trying to bring our mind to the spiritual platform. So the mind is subtle. So then the activities are also subtle. So a small amount of water is put in the palm and sprinkled. It's not a gross amount of water. Like that. So we're not dealing that the senses are satisfied that lots of water went on something, therefore it's pure. No, that's called cleaning. You take and you know something and rinse it nicely with water, because there you're dealing with more gross elements. But the subtle elements, then it's by mantra, meditation, and that. So it's very subtle, like that. Yes. Yeah. Not exactly, but I would say that because it's coming from yajna. Like that. I mean, of course, if we're doing transcendental yajna, then also rain comes. Means you do spiritual activities, the benefits of the pious activities automatically come. But generally all these things are coming because of pious activities. So pious activities means that there's desire. Like that. That's one thing. The other, you know, then, you know, that would be the only thing I can think of. Yeah, natural source. I mean, that's always the best. We mentioned this. This is coming from you know, a sacred place, from a sacred river, if not from a fresh water source. You know, if not just from a clean tap. You know, but one would be careful of the water source. It means even though in the building the water in the kitchen and the water in the bathroom are the same water. Right? You understand? But the difference is when you take water from the kitchen, the mind stays pure. Well, if you take water from the bathroom, the mind becomes contaminated. It's the same water. But the mind becomes dirty because you've taken it from the bathroom. So that has a particular connotation. In the bathroom, you know, is for cleaning and, you know, gross kind of activity. So then the mind will get contaminated by taking water from that place. Therefore, water is always taken from a clean source in a clean situation. Right? Does that make sense?
I think there's two clean situations. There's two clean situations. One is actually source of the water, and then there's that position that you take it from.
Yeah. Yeah, because this, even if it's taking it from the Ganga, but if the area next to the bank of the Ganga is not clean, then that you would not prefer that. You would prefer to go to a place that's clean, like that. So those aspects are there, because the mind, one, the gross elements of cleanliness have to be considered, but also the subtleties of the mind. That also has to be considered. Anything else on Atsuan? Okay. Chanting of the Gayatri Mantra, the Gayatri Japa. In the Bhagavatam 11.27.11, Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava, fixing the mind on me, the devotee should worship me by his various prescribed duties, such as chanting the Gayatri Mantra at the three junctures of the day. Such performances are enjoined by the Vedas and purify the worshipper of reactions to fruitive activities. So, the whole idea of the spiritual life is to purify oneself of fruitive activities, either pious or impious. Both of them are an obstacle. Just like if you do pious activities, then you need to receive the result. So that means you have to stay in the material world to receive it. Isn't it? So these pious activities also stop our progress. Like that. They may be, how you say, have their advantage that pious activities generally means a pious nature, but not necessarily. It can also mean that there's a very, you know, greedy and very greatly hankering for material facility. So even though one may do all one's duties very nicely, one may be very clean and do all, according to the rules and regulations, do everything very, very properly. Right? One may do. But the difficulty is because of one's material desire, then one will not behave and interact with others in a very wonderful way. You know? I've seen myself generally, like smarta Brahmins, they follow everything very, very nicely. You know, at least in the areas where they're worried about the result that they want. But they're not really very nice people to deal with. Like that. They're not necessarily nasty, but it's just that unless they feel they're getting some great benefit from dealing with you, they don't want to deal. You know? You'll also find that with other businessmen or politicians or anybody who has, you know, something that they want to get done. You know, unless you're helpful in getting that done or in some way you please them, then they don't really want to spend any time. So like that, they're a little bit short on time. So one has to be freed from these things. That otherwise, then also, these will get in the way of our dealings with Krishna also. And that is very important. So the devotional activities, and specifically the Gayatri, is for doing this. Especially the Brahma Gayatri, that is to bring us to the platform of Brahman, understanding that we're not the body, that we're the soul. Like that. So all the Gayatris have this function, but that is the general function of the Brahma Gayatri. While the other Gayatris then give a much more specific direction in our worship. Right? It means according to your deities, that will be your Gayatris. So because we are worshippers of Krishna, we have Gayatris about Krishna. Well, we see that others will have about Narayan or Lakshmi or so many others, because that is the focus of their meditation. That's the focus of their performance of their devotional activities. So the Gayatri gives a fixed direction to our activities. Okay. So the time of the day that these are chanted is the sunrise, the moon, and the sunset. So that's the general, and generally one finds one can do that very nicely if one is anywhere between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn. Otherwise, when one crosses these regions, then to some degree one can, as far generally as banana trees and coconut trees will grow, then it's still... that still functions. But once you cross beyond that, then you find strange things like 11:30 at night, the sun goes down, and it comes up at 3 in the morning. So then it becomes very hard to work on the sunrise, sunset, and noon like this. So therefore, for the West, then Prabhupada has fixed it like before or after Mangalartik, 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the evening. So basically 6 in the morning, 6 in the evening, and you know, and 12 o'clock. Because then it sets a time in which you can do it and not be worried about the actual weather, you know. Some places like it, you know, 10 in the morning the sun comes up and then it goes down at 2 o'clock. So, you know, then you could chant it 10, 12, and 2. You know, so within 4 hours you could chant all. So like this, we run into these problems when you cross beyond the border of coconut trees and banana trees. So those are the proper times. What is happening at these times is that the movement of the life airs in the body, you have two, the Ida and the Pingala. So the Ida is the sun, and the Pingala is the moon. So it creates, it's hot and cold. So these are moving in the body, and generally you'll find that one side or the other is prominent, like that. But at the Sandhya, they both become balanced. So traditionally that is the time that is chosen, because then the mind becomes more peaceful and all that. Like that, or at least it becomes easier to fix the mind. And if one doesn't fix the mind, one generally finds these are times when the mind gets a little wild also. Means it can be made peaceful very easily, but it can also get wild easily. Like we see, like this time, now just before the sun's going down and that, you'll see all the birds will start making all kinds of noise. Animals will start running around, you know, the winds start moving. And everything like that, in the morning, in the evening, all these. So the movements of things gets very... So these are very good times for the chanting of the of these mantras. So one should understand the relationship of these mantras. That these mantras are what is called Nam Atmika. The Gayatri mantras are called Nam Atmika, means the holy name is their life, their Atma, their soul. So they only have function because of the holy name. So if we are nicely chanting the holy name, then we find that these mantras perform very well. But without the chanting of the holy name, then one will not get very much benefit from these. Also, these mantras must be received through initiation. Unless one receives them from an initiation, then they will not have effect. See, Hare Krishna mantra doesn't worry about initiation or not. You start chanting, you immediately get effect. But the Gayatri mantras, without initiation, they give no effect. Like that. It's just the way they work, because they're dependent upon the holy name. So when one receives them from the spiritual master, when one has the proper qualifications, one has to have the brahminical qualifications. You know, the one must be clean, must be some standard of purity, proper consciousness, like that. Then they have effect, because then one can concentrate nicely. Like that. So the holy name is such that by chanting, then one becomes elevated. By chanting, then one becomes purified. One develops that brahminical character. Then one can receive the Gayatri mantras, which give a further focus of the chanting, to our chanting, and they help elevate one to the devotional platform, to the spiritual platform. So this combination between the Pancharatra Gayatris and the Hare Krishna mantra then becomes very powerful. Because of the conditioned nature, then it works very nicely. Though one should always remember that the Hare Krishna mantra can do all of that itself. But this is something that helps. Yeah. So Lord Chaitanya showed that the emphasis is on the hearing and chanting of the holy name, our japa and kirtan. At the same time, he also showed by his own example that those who are serious about spiritual advancement take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master and then receive mantras from him, like that, so that they can worship the deity. So this pancharatrika initiation. Because then, yeah, Krishna sets up a process by which you can he can test, he can watch, he can observe. Means he wants to see how you surrender to the devotees, how you follow their instructions, their orders. Then he can understand how you will surrender to him. Right? Without surrendering to the devotees, then it's very difficult to surrender to the Lord. The Lord is not accepting us directly. Krishna mentions those who claim to be his devotee, they're not his devotee. Those who say that they are the devotee of his devotee, they are Krishna's devotee. Krishna accepts them. Right? You understand the point? Means the devotees are already there who are serving Krishna. It's not that we walk in and then, you know, bump Mother Yashoda out of the way, or, you know, tell Sridham and Sudham to, you know, move over like that. Point is they're there, they've eternally been there, they'll always be there. And so then, like that, then things are going on. Hare Krishna. So these things are going on, then they're already serving. So it's a matter of us becoming qualified to become their servants. Right? So as we become their servants, as the servant of our spiritual master, in other words, we serve the spiritual master, serving the previous acharyas, serving the Lord's devotees. Right? Serving his eternal associates. Krishna accepts that person as his devotee. Like that. So this is Krishna's process. Right? So now one may say, then we mention the point, well, if only one is contaminated, you know, when it's conditioned, then the pancharatrik process, or the process of vaidhi, is important. One can say, well, we can just take shelter of the, if we are pure, we're on that more pure platform, then we can take advantage of just the Bhagavad Vidhi, just the chanting of Hare Krishna. So in the same principle applies. That is true. But still, one is taking shelter of the devotee and following the instructions of a devotee. So the holy name is considered that you are initiated on the Bhagavat Marg when you hear instructions from an advanced devotee, and you take shelter of those instructions. In other words, the same principle of accepting the instructions as one's life and soul, and that person accepting to give you the instructions that will take you back to Godhead applies, though it is done without any ritual, without any, right? Therefore, we see it's understood and accepted by the, you know, bona fide devotees that the six Goswamis are direct disciples. Prabhupada uses the word direct disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now we see there was no ritual, no ceremony. They didn't go through the pancharatrik samskars from Lord Chaitanya. No. They were initiated on the platform of the Bhagavat Marg. They heard from Lord Chaitanya directly. He directly instructed them. And they accepted that. And, you know, so Rupa Goswami, then his instructions, and Sanatan Goswami, they heard at Allahabad, like this. So the different Goswamis, then they at different places, there in Puri, then they received instructions from the Lord. So this on the platform of the Bhagavat Marg then qualifies them as devotees. So this is the principle. Okay, so in either case, this process is there. But if one is in the conditioned state, then it's recommended that one must take the pancharatrik initiation. If one is not in the conditioned state, then it is not necessary for one's own benefit, but for the benefit of others, one takes it. Because there's no problem. The Gayatri mantras are meditations on the Supreme Lord, so one will also find great pleasure in chanting them. Plus, you set the proper example. Like we say, Krishna and Balaram, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Ramachandra, they all accepted initiation, even though they're the Supreme Lord themselves. Okay, another aspect he brings up here is that the pancharatrik mantras that one receives through panchasamskar, that then was always, that and Hare Krishna mantra were always giving the prominence in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. Not so much prominence was put upon the Vedic Diksha or the Brahma Gayatri. Because those socially who were born in families who would receive such initiation, then would receive that. When they're small children, they would get. But if they were big, you know, as adults, they didn't bother. Because whatever's there in the Brahma Gayatri will be contained within the other Gayatris. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then just to make a point, establish the point, that the Vaishnav is a realized Brahman. So therefore, the minimum platform that a gross materialist should accept a Vaishnav on is that of a Brahman. Therefore, he included the Upanayanam ceremony, or the receiving the Brahma Gayatri, along with the Pancharatrik Gayatris. So by the power of the holy name, then one comes to the Brahminical platform, and then one receives then the Vedic Gayatri and the Pancharatrik Gayatris. So Srila Prabhupada also followed this principle. So those who receive the Gayatri must chant it 3 times a day for the rest of their life. That's just the way it goes. Not twice, not once, but 3 times. Yes. It may be when somebody takes Babaji initiation that they take off their Brahman thread. They may do that. It doesn't mean that they stop chanting the mantras. See, the thread identifies one as a Brahman, or at least as a Dvija. So, Babaji is supposed to be Paramahamsa. So Paramahamsa means no designation. So that means not Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. So therefore, all the identities of that, they won't follow. But for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they keep the Sika, they keep the neck beads, they keep the threads, they don't bother taking all these things off. So one should also chant at the proper time. Otherwise, it's an offense to Gayatri Devi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, if while engaged in glorifying the Lord, the proper time for chanting the Gayatri passes, it is not an offense to miss the correct time, for such glorification is the essence of the Gayatri Japa. Still, the devotee should make up the missed chanting at an appropriate time. In other words, if one can't chant at exact time, but a little bit later, a little bit earlier, like that, then that's okay. As long as one's doing service. It shouldn't be out of laziness or other things like that. But if one is performing some service, especially preaching, sometimes then proper time may be missed. But it must always be made up. 3 Gayatris must be chanted a day. Like that. In the Vedic, with the Vedic mantras, it was considered that if you missed a Gayatri, then until the next sandhya you would fast. Then that would ensure that you didn't make it a habit. So in other words, if you missed the noon Gayatri, you wouldn't take lunch. Right? And then after you've chanted both the noon and the evening Gayatri in the evening, then you would take your meals. Or if you missed the morning Gayatri, you wouldn't take breakfast. You would chant the morning and the noon one together. Right? So like that, they would be very... In other words, one should be very careful not to create bad habits. Basic principle of the chanting is from the basic tradition is from the time the deities are woken up, and between that time and the sunrise, that's for the morning Gayatri. It's generally mentioned that when the, does it mention more? Then when the stars are still in the sky, visible, that is considered best. Then when the sun hasn't risen, but there's no stars, that's next best. And then once the sun has risen, and then that next 24 minutes after the sun has risen, that's considered third best. So within the time the deities wake up, 24 minutes after the sun has risen. That will be here. In the west, then, at least by Darshan Artik. Because sometimes the sun doesn't come up until 6, 6:30, 7, like that. Then the noon one will mean, where's the middle of the day? It means you take the sunrise and the sunset and find where's the middle of that. So that's madhyana. So that within 24 minutes before that or after that, you know. So generally that will be from when the deities take their lunch to when they take rest. You know, so that's basically between 12, 1, like that. That's the ideal time. Though I've heard that Prabhupada was on a preaching program once. I think Brahmananda was mentioning, and then when they were driving back from that program at 3 o'clock, Prabhupada was chanting his noon Gayatri. But that seems to be about the maximum, you know, stretch. In other words, you have what's called a prahara, which is a 3-hour block of time. So in a day, you'll get 8 praharas. You know, there'll generally be 4 in the daytime and 4 at night. So from the third prahara, yeah, the third prahara means from noon till about 3, somewhere in there, a little bit this way and that way. It ideally should be within that. Past that, then it's better to leave it until the evening Gayatri. Then the evening Gayatri will be just like the opposite of the morning. Is just when the sun sets, that's the best. Then after the sun sets, but before the stars come, that's second best. And then after the stars have appeared, that is third best. You'll find that these times, the concentration is the best. Just as the sun's setting in the evening, and then after that, it starts to become disturbed again. And then in the morning, before it sets, before it rises, and as it rises, then it becomes disturbed again. So it's from that time until the deities take rest. So that is traditionally the proper times, because the Pancharatra Gayatris are connected with the deity worship. Therefore, the timings of the mantras and the meditation of the mantras is also on the deities. Does that make some sense? Okay, so that means from the time the deities wake up till sunrise, then the middle of the day, and then from when the sun sets until the deities take rest. Those are proper times. In other words, one should avoid the chanting at midnight and other such strange and wonderful things, unless, you know, something, you know, due to some preaching engagement, and one should try to adjust these things. So, so Gayatri should be chanted in a clean, peaceful place, ideally in front of the deities. Srila Prabhupada writes, it is essential for a devotee to worship the form of the Lord and not only meditate upon the form of the Lord within his mind with the chanting of the mantra. Oh, no. Oh, I see. He says it's essential that one worships the Lord's form and not just the meditation from chanting the Gayatri. That both should be there. So the Shastra recommends facing east during the morning and noon sandhyas and north in the evening. This is specifically if one is outdoors, you know, where there's no temple or deity. But if one's in the presence of the deity, picture of one's spiritual master, or, you know, the photos that you like worship or have, you know, some special relationship with, then one should understand that that is a proper direction to face, because you have two directions. You have the you know, physical east, and then you have the ceremonial east. Ceremonial then is always lined up in somewhere in relationship to some ceremony with the deity, and either facing the deity or keeping the deity on the left side, you know, some that like this is considered. So the reason east is very special is because, especially in the morning, is that is where the sun is rising from. So the sun is then clearing ignorance, creating light. So then the deity, the spiritual master, they are also clearing ignorance and creating, you know, knowledge within the heart. So if one faces the deity, then that would be the most proper, if one has that facility. But if one is outside or just anywhere, then one may face like this. Otherwise, you'll see sometimes devotees will sit with their backs to, you know, the murti of Srila Prabhupada so they can properly face east. But this is a misunderstanding of the purpose of the rule. The rule is that east is from where the sun is coming up and, you know, like that. But the, it mentions, does it mention here? Yeah, it mentions if you sit in your own room, if your own place, like generally, you know, everyone has their seat, their place where they sit, and that's where they study and, you know, do their activities. People want to visit them or different things. They have their seat. At least it's an Indian kind of tradition. Then if one uses one's own seat, then one is getting like, that would be compared to like one unit of benefit of chanting your Gayatri. Then if you chant outside in an open, very nice, pleasant place, you know, beautiful place, then that is increased. The one gets more benefit. There's greater amount of units. I don't remember the exact number. Then if one chants while standing in a river, flowing river, a sacred pond, or like that, then it's even more increased than that. And if one chants in front of the deity, then it's increased unlimitedly. So we can understand that the facing of east, you know, that has its benefits. The facing the deity has unlimited benefits. So one should learn, one, how to calculate, both mathematically and spiritually. So one should avoid sitting with one's back to Srila Prabhupada facing east, like that. Though it's, you'll see it's very common in many places. Okay. One should avoid, and then the sitting place also should be seen that it's pure. If you always like sit on your bed, then you should see that you use your bed, but then after it should be covered with some pure kind of covering. It shouldn't be just the same things that you slept in. Otherwise, it's not considered very pure. So it's not the best place for chanting the Gayatris or studying or these kind of things. Then it says, out of respect, one should not chant with one's back to a temple, to a body of water, fire, or a peepal tree. So, or the spiritual master, because you're facing east. You should be properly bathed and dressed with Vaishnav tilak. Sikha should be tied. Then one should cover the hands with the cloth for chanting Gayatri, and one should chant the mantra silently. The reason one covers is that whatever one is doing japa, japa means whether it's counting, mantras are being said, counting is going on. Now, if the counting is seen, means it's visible, then just like the eating, so many benefits will be taken by all the residents of Bhuvarloka. So the same way as the results of our chanting will also be taken by them. That's how they get benefits in this way. So therefore, one avoids showing like that. another aspect is just the chanting, then that's supposed to be more of a private thing. So then that is kept, you know, just like we eat privately, we bathe, sleep, all these things that shouldn't be done publicly. So in the same way, this japa should also be done in such a way that the fingers that are counting cannot be seen like that. That's why we keep the japa beads in a bag. Is that we're not just doing for a few moments, a few times a day. So we keep them always covered in the bead bag. And that way, by chanting, then we can chant. It means the bead bag can be out in the open, because the beads are inside and the counting is going on inside. Like that. It's not that you have to take the bead bag and then again cover it like that. You know, you'll see it's popular like that, to do like that. You put your hands, hand in the bead bag and then the bead bag under the chudder. But that developed from that was a development of the Gaudiya Math Brahmacharis, because when they would travel on the trains, they would be bothered by the local people. So therefore they would just keep their bead bag under their cloth so no one noticed that they were chanting. And then minimal botheration would be there. You know, maybe when they came on the train, someone would make a comment, and that's it. But then if they were chanting, then people would constantly bother them. Like that. If you want to test this principle, you can try writing on the Krishnagar to Shelda train, and you can see for yourself the natural reactions of the people. So that's just the habit that developed out of that kind of situation, wanting to keep things very peaceful. But the covering, the function of covering the beads and covering the chanting, that's done by keeping them in the bag, like that. Yes, book is gone. Just trying to think if there was something else on that point. Yeah. So the Shastras, you'll see that they generally list so many different rules and regulations. Looks like it's going to get more serious.
Yes. Any short cut?
No, we Yeah. So in the scriptures, then it always mentions these various rules and regulations. And you always have the first principle is that it pleases the Lord. This is the way the Lord likes things. Or this is the way that by following, one can get to the platform where one can please the Lord. That's the first principle. Then, if that's not there, then the scriptures will describe the particular, The pious benefits you will get by following that particular rule. Then, if you don't like to follow in that way, if that doesn't inspire you, then they will tell you what impiety will result, or what loss will be there by not following. You understand? It means the first thing is you do it because it's pleasing to Krishna, or is that process by it'll get you to Krishna. Second is that then they show what pious activities you'll get, and then if that doesn't work, then they'll show you what will be the reactions if you don't do it. So that is very, you'll see the scriptures always talk in this way. So much of the time you'll see that if you don't do this, you go to hell, this, that, you know. So in this way also, the end of the line on this point is that if the Gayatri or the Japa is not covered, then one loses, the benefits can be stolen by the residents of Bhuvarloka. Right? So we understand? But in other words, there's more subtle platforms where you have Gayatri Devi, when you chant, then she is invoked. So then these things are, you know, you always, the deity is not out in the open. There's some protection, there's some proper things are kept. In this way, then it creates the proper mood, the atmosphere that goes along with the activity. Right? Just like it's very difficult to go and, you know, set up a nice dining table and all the silverware and everything and bring out the butler and everything and, you know, bring in all the fancy eateries and all the different drinks and all that, but right in the middle of an 8-lane highway. You know, it will be very difficult because the atmosphere, it's a wrong atmosphere, you know. Though one can set up all the paraphernalia very nicely, but the situation is not, you know. Or you may have a nice situation but no paraphernalia. Very ideal place, ideal food, ideal association, but you don't have any proper utensils, there's no spoon to serve anything with, you know, and people come along with full buckets and just kind of dump some out on your plate, you know, like that. So you have to have the total situation, that's the ideal. So therefore, along with it is the proper clean place, the right attitude, the right time of the day, the right, you know, way you dress, you know, keeping the hands covered, chanting silently. So the Gayatri is always chanted silently. So it can either be done just in the mind without moving the mouth, or one can chant it while moving the mouth but making no sound. You know, you would move the mouth like you are saying the mantras, so you mouth the mantras, but make no sound. Like that. One can do either of these ways. Yeah. And then one should try to concentrate on the mantras, the meaning of the mantras. Like that, if need be, one can also break the mantras between, because Gayatri means it's a particular meter. It means that there's three sections. Like that, 8 syllables each section. So that makes Gayatri Chanda, Gayatri meter. So then one can break it between the bija syllable and the first pada, the first 8 syllables. Then after this first 8 syllables, then after the second, and then at the end. And then that gives one time to concentrate. The gap is not much. It's just a momentary gap. So that can help the concentration on chanting. That is one of the things one can do. So one should avoid trying to think of other things and all that. If one finds the mind gets too wild and all this, then one can try, doing achman, doing bhuta shuddhi, you know, these kind of things that they will calm the mind, and then one can chant. But otherwise, if one's mind is peaceful, then those aren't so important. Like that. You should avoid, you know, yawning, walking back and forth, falling asleep, scratching here and there, you know, doing deep nasal archaeological digs, you know, while you are chanting. The same time is that if you're chanting Gayatri and some senior devotee comes, or some situation in which you must receive devotees, then it's better to stop chanting, receive those devotees, and then continue chanting later, rather than to not chant, to finish the chanting and not properly receive devotees. Okay, any questions on this?
A little hard. This residents of Bhuvalokas taking the benefit of your chanting. Is it like the whole benefit? Or if you're like chanting sincerely, you don't make spiritual advancement towards Krishna?
It's a fine point. Means that that is there, but you'll find that the mind will be disturbed. The mind will be disturbed, and any of the pious results, this and that, they'll take. That's natural. Spiritual benefits, of course, if we're sincere. But if we're sincere, we'll also follow the rules, isn't it? Right? If we don't know, that's one thing. But if we know and we don't follow, then where is the question of sincerity? Prabhupada makes that point, I think, in a letter about boga and mixing of boga and prasad in the kitchen. The last time I read it was on the kitchen wall in Athens. And there was a particular cook in the kitchen there. I used to have to come in and show him how to cook, so that one would feel satisfaction in honoring the Lord's remnants afterwards. You wouldn't happen to know who I'm talking about, would you?
Two possibilities.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, one of them is sitting right here. Okay. So the point was, as he was saying, is that boga and prasad should never be mixed. So you have prasad, it cannot be put like in the refrigerator where you're keeping boga, or kept in a place like this. It should be kept somewhere else. If you have to keep it in the fridge, keep another refrigerator. Like that, you know, keep it in another place, wash in a different place. In other words, if you can't make this separation between prasad and boga, he said, where is the meaning of love? We'll say, oh, we're doing it for Krishna, we don't care for the rules, but somehow or another Krishna does. He doesn't like his bhog and prasad mixed. We may think, well, it's no big deal, but what would you think if we brought, you know, breakfast and all the buckets were kept with the noon stuff, and we're sticking the spoons in this one and that one, and you know, when you're getting your, you know, your doll that's got all kinds of moody in it from the morning, and you know, when we're giving you doll, you know, something else and it's got a little milk in it from the morning, and you know what I'm saying? I mean, you wouldn't appreciate it. You think that this is pretty bad service and organization. So Krishna's the same. He's eaten it, it's prasad. So if it comes in contact with anything else, that becomes prasad A. Right? So then Krishna doesn't appreciate having his offerings contaminated in this way. So Prabhupada makes the point, where's the question of love? You may say you've got so much love, but if you can't follow the rules, that proves there's no love. Therefore, Krishna runs the conditioned soul through the Vidhi Marg. Because if he'll follow those rules with the purpose of pleasing Krishna, not for rules' sake, I mean, someone who follows the rules just for rules' sake, that's called a smarta. But someone who follows the rules to please Krishna, that pleases Krishna. Then Krishna knows that one is willing to follow the rules. Because when one gets to the spiritual realm, then there's also rules there, but they're not rules as rules here, like ritual. They're just the way rasa manifests. There's a thing called rasa bas. So Krishna doesn't like rasa bas. Like that. So that's how it will manifest on that side, in the transcendental realm. So one has to be able to follow what the authority tells you. Spiritual masters, spiritual authorities tell you it should be done like this. If you can't follow it here, then why are you going to listen to the residents of Vrindavan when they tell you do this, do that? You know? They say, go bring this, and you'll say, why? Why not him? I brought it yesterday. Why he can't bring it? What's he doing? He's doing nothing. Then why the residents of Vrindavan will bring you to the spiritual world? They don't want you. Right? They don't need useless people like that. So we can't follow the rules here and get it in our heart that we must follow authority. We must follow the parampara. There's no question that we're going to make it to the spiritual realm. Therefore, these rules are given to follow. Now, the acharyas point out what is important, what is not. Becomes some may be more important for Vaikuntha worship. Some may be more important for going to the heavenly planets. Some may be more important for keeping yourself from going to hell. Like that. So the acharyas point out what's important. So this one rule of covering the beads, you know, Prabhupada mentioned, he didn't like devotees walking around with the beads outside. So one thing, if you're sitting in front of the deity, then it's not so difficult because there's nobody's going to come near you while you're sitting in front of the deity. Right? No one's going to come and... But if you're anywhere else, you're not in front of the deity, then unless you're fully absorbed in thinking of the Lord, then we are susceptible to the influence of these other personalities. So therefore, we keep our beads in a bead bag. Right? So in the same way as we cover the thread when we're chanting Gayatri. Unless we're in, you know, if you're sitting in the temple in front of the deity, then it's not so important. You know? By habit, one may do it. But if one is outside or in a river or this or that, you're covered. If you don't have cloth, it can be covered with the hand. You know? Main thing is just from outside can't be seen. That's all. Like that. You'll see that many times. I'll just hold near the chest and cover it with the hand. That's also good. Right? You understand? Otherwise, of course, we'd be magnanimous. Yes, I want to benefit all the Buddhas and Pretas and let them take all the pious act. I don't need anyway. In fact, the purpose of chanting the Gayatris is to remove the pious activities. So, yes, I don't, you know, yes, but you be benevolent on your own, in your own area. The Gayatri is service to Krishna. Be benevolent with your own prasad. Give that all away. You know, benevolent with your time. Instead of sleeping, stay up all night and chant. You know, like this. Be benevolent on your time. Don't be benevolent in the areas where Krishna's indicated that we should follow these things. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes or no?
The last point.
Means it is directed in the scriptures that one should not show the chanting of the japa.
Yeah.
Right? Because if the japa is shown, then the bhuts, the ghosts and other things can come and disturb your mind. Mm-hmm. So if your mind is disturbed, you don't concentrate on Krishna. If you don't think of Krishna when you're chanting the Gayatri, what satisfaction is Krishna getting out of your chanting the Gayatri? Mm-hmm. Right? So one may say, well, I don't care if they take the results. I'm very... very broad-minded, very charitable, let them take. Let them also benefit. Let the whole universe go back to Godhead. That's very nice. But Krishna's given us this rule. What I'm saying is, you want to be benevolent and so charitable, do that on your own time, with your own things. You know, give away all your stuff, walk around in kopans, give away all your prasad and fast. You know, you understand what I'm saying? You want to be charitable, do it on your own, in your own time, not on Krishna's time. It means you're chanting Gayatri, you've invoked Gayatri Devi, like that as the Lord's devotee. You've invoked the Gayatri mantras, which are non-different from the Lord, and then we don't pay attention to them simply because we refuse to stick our hand under our cloth, right? Because we're so benevolent that we want all the Bhutas and Pretas and Yakshas and Rakshasas and Gandharvas and Vididharas and Charanas and to walk off with the benefits. You understand? Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Did you make the point about, you know, that the Gayatri mantra had to be passed to you by a spiritual, given to you by a spiritual master?
Yes.
That chanting Maha mantra didn't have to be passed to you by a spiritual master. Is there any difference between chanting Maha mantra before initiation and afterwards?
Means the Gayatris will only start to function once one is initiated. While the Hare Krishna mantra will function before initiation. But with initiation, then it becomes more powerful because then one has accepted the shelter of the spiritual master. So at that time, then Krishna recognizes one as serious. Understand? They consider that as a very serious step. Before that, one is progressing. But then, like, the commitment is more serious then. Like, you have Shraddha, then you start Sadhu Sangha. But then Bhajana Kriya, that means that's the third stage. So then Krishna sees now one is more serious. Like that, you know. And as one then works very hard to remove the anartas and become established in devotional service, then that's more serious than that. You know. So like this, so many stages are there. So one has to, one has to. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. How are we doing for time? Looks like we're about finished. Okay. So I think we should probably end here, especially since it's not raining now, and just in case it does rain. And everyone has a chance to get back to wherever they're going. So today is
22nd.
So the next class will continue with the Brahmin thread and then cleaning and decorating the temple. And that will then finish the first section of the puja, Abhigamana. We'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.